This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Visit AMI.ca for more accessible media.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just saying. Yeah.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
You know, one of the things, Danielle, that we've been able to do with the roundtables, have so many varying guests, varying topics, and sometimes just so many subjects come up when we do just our regular run-of-the-mill, hey, let's throw some things on the table and chat. You hosted once. Danielle Rumya has hosted the roundtable once. And, of course, generally I'm here kicking around and doing it. Today is a kind of interesting dichotomy, Danielle, that we're going to get into in a moment. A very special guest that we're very grateful to have returning to the program. Our guest is going to be bringing to us a very, very personal conversation. And we're, as I mentioned, quite grateful. And as I've mentioned in the show, the openness that people bring to us is tremendous. And I feel very crucial to having a balanced program and sometimes getting conversations that, you know, are awkward, that we're uncomfortable with, that we sit back and say, my gosh, thank you for telling me about this. Something that is so not part of maybe our lives, but something we need to know about and talk a bit about. Atal McLaughlin Rock is joining us. This is Danielle's granddaughter. And as mentioned, she's been on the program before, and we've spoke about eating disorders before, but recently has decided she's comfortable to talk about her own experience with this illness. Atal, thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Well, hanging in. We're having a great show, and we chatted a bit the other day when you ladies were out for a walk, and I kind of wanted to have that conversation with you because of the way we do the roundtable and the way the conversation goes. And I'm hoping too that with the subject that we're going to talk about and our experiences with it, that also allows it to be a little easier for you to express some things that in this conversation is the most personal for you. Can I ask what made you decide to speak about your personal experience with an eating disorder?
Yeah, so in October, I will be celebrating my 10-year anniversary, or I guess rather not celebrating, but it has been 10 years since I had my first hospitalization from an eating disorder, and then it has been 8 years since I have been in the hospital. And so for me, it was kind of an opportunity to be able to reach out to the public and to talk about and destigmatize the concept of eating disorders and how they affect people in their lives.
Yeah, I think one of the things you said there too, how they plural, and we know there's more, just like a hospital visit is going to take more, and people may say, well, I don't really quite understand what's the hospital visit about. So tell us what an eating disorder is.
Yeah, so eating disorders are very complicated, actually. They are a very serious mental illness. They are treatable, though I think one of the biggest stigmas that is kind of across the board for eating disorders that they seem like a choice and that they seem like they are passing fads or phases, but there are so many things that can cause eating disorders to exist. There are environmental factors, there are genetic factors, there are societal factors, and there are many things that impact someone's ability to be able to thrive and someone's ability to be able to get or seek help and access treatment. So eating disorders can be boxed in, I guess, as an illness. It's a mental illness that can affect the physical body, and so that's why there are hospitalizations that are occurred, and there are also the psychiatric symptoms of that. So that's where people with eating disorders that may be dealing with a specific type of eating disorder where they're dealing mostly with the psychiatric symptoms, or some people are dealing with the physical symptoms. There's a wide variety of things. So eating disorders are usually kind of comprised of people who are dealing with in the control. So it's eating disorders are a means of control sometimes for people. Sometimes it's a societal expectation. Sometimes it's people telling you what not to eat, what to eat. And sometimes it's if your life feels out of control, one thing you can control is the food. So there's anorexia nervosa, there's bulimia nervosa, there is binge eating disorder, there is eating disorders otherwise not specified, and there are many different types of eating disorders, but they all are kind of boxed into this idea that there is a psychiatric or there is a psychological thing that is going on with the brain that is telling a person that food is a means of to whatever end.
Danielle, when you were younger, growing up, I know myself there was a lot of programming on to kind of bring attention, especially the artist Karen Carpenter and what she went through.
Right.
But TV tried to bring it to us in a way that we could understand. And most cases, it seemed to reflect that, somebody was trying to lose weight for, I don't know, dancing, for acting, for there was
acrobatics
a cause.
And
right.
Athletics. That's right. And often people said, I don't understand. Why don't they just eat? You know, the solution is simple. Just, here's the food. Now just eat it. Tal, what happens when somebody has an eating disorder and they're told just eat?
Well, it's not the most helpful advice. I'll put it that way. It's not as simple as that. When someone is going through an eating disorder, living with an eating disorder, someone's telling them to just eat, it actually can be quite harmful because it's the expectation that someone isn't trying their hardest to be able to kind of fight these thoughts that they're having, these urges that they're having. It can be quite detrimental, actually. Though there are a lot of passing comments that I've had in my experience that have been negative and that have impacted me in ways that were detrimental to my treatment and to my ability to help myself.
So when you say that too, and we talk about, you said when you first went to the hospital to when you last time you went, obviously moments where you needed to go and seek that extra help where you were not well. And I don't know if it was not eating, if you were really feeling in crisis in a different way, and obviously you can share what you feel about what you're comfortable to about those different hospital visits, because I'd imagine sometimes people aren't eating or they're overeating or they're so depressed and upset.
Yeah. So there's, like I said, there's many different types of eating disorders. The eating disorder that I was diagnosed with was anorexia nervosa. So one of my biggest struggles was actually just eating. And anorexia nervosa is a restrictive disorder. So it's usually comprised of people who aren't eating or aren't eating enough. And there's different in the Diagnostic Statistical Manual 5. So the DSM-5, it often has to do with weight. It often has to do with all of these different numbers and kind of putting you in a box. But I think the thing that I want to highlight the most is that anybody can have an eating disorder, and the ways that treatment affects you and ways that you access treatment can be very, very different for everyone. So there isn't one solution for someone who is living with an eating disorder. There are 1,000 different ways to be able to treat it, and there are so many different, scientifically proven ways that things don't work, and there are ways that things do work. And I think after my final hospitalization, because I was there for quite some time, after my final hospitalization when I turned 18, I think for me it was the switch, I guess, was recognizing, because like you mentioned, Kelly, it depends on what's going on for the person. So if they're dealing with overeating, if they're dealing with, I was in a treatment center where there were people with all different types of eating disorders, and I was living with that and seeing people's different experiences. And for me, that was kind of a change where I was able to see that the diversity of which people that are living with eating disorders that are affected. For me, that was my opportunity to be away from my life and conquer, the struggles that I was dealing with and then be able to make something of it. And make something of it right now for me means talking about it publicly.
Mm-hmm.
This is really important. Your physical health, not just your emotional and mental health, were affected. Would you be willing to tell people a bit about some of the other side effects that the eating disorder seemed to bring about?
Sure. Yeah. So I don't like to focus on numbers too deeply because I think that they can be, for some people, they can be quite triggering. Though for myself, once I got to a certain body weight where it was too low for my organs to be able to function properly, the major organ that was affected primarily was my heart. And my heart rate plummeted to a very, very low number, and it was very difficult for me to be able to sustain conversations, to be able to focus, to be able to do pretty much anything. I was kind of there, breathing. And that I am by far not the only person that has experienced something like that. Anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa are primarily the eating disorders that affect the physical health the most, because with bulimia nervosa, there is a binge purge kind of aspect to it. And so that can really affect your esophagus, your gastrointestinal system, your stomach. And for me, I think, like I said, the biggest thing that was affected was my heart. And I was restricted from doing I wasn't allowed physical activity. I was in a wheelchair for quite some time, because I was too weak to walk. And for some reason, because when I was in that state and because I was so absorbed in eating disorder with my world, it didn't faze me. Mm-hmm. It didn't scare me. And I think that now that I'm in a different place, it changed my perspective, because I value my life. And I think I was in a very, very difficult and interesting position at that point in my life.
I've had friends and I've feared for their safety on it, because knowing that it's not a choice, it's not something someone says, well, yeah, I'm eating and I'm going to go get sick because I just, it's not a choice. It's like you say, the sickness part of it. And a lot of people very young, not suggesting for a moment that it can't be a problem for other people, older people with food insecurity as a thing for a lot of people too, causing a different kind of situation. Danielle, mm-hmm. I have to ask you as the grandmother looking on, and wondering what's the right things to say, not to say in those interactions.
Well, I think I said a lot of wrong things. I certainly didn't understand it at first at all. I thought, maybe if I made something tastier, she would be more interested in eating.
Right.
And I don't think I really understood the extent of the problem. I think it started around when you were about 12. Is that right, Tal? About 12 years old. Yeah. My children had been picky eaters. I figured, oh gosh, another picky eater. But it's not just picky eating that we're talking about. It's something else altogether. And children who are going through this have to do so much work in order to maintain their eating disorder. And it's almost as if the eating disorder had a characteristic all of its own. It's almost like a creature that takes over the life of a wonderful person, whether they're children or adults. And that fight takes every piece of energy they could possibly have. And I have to say, Tal is in recovery. I am, in great admiration. I think she has worked so hard, and she's developed such an understanding, not only of eating disorders, but of children. And I think that, correct me if I am wrong, Tal, but would you say that your choice of profession for the future has been in some way influenced by what you've been through yourself?
Yes and no. I think I've always been, I do work with children, and my passion is working with children of all abilities and in different life circumstances. I do think that because I am pursuing child and youth counseling, the only way really that I was introduced to this profession was actually working with child and youth counselors, right? And they were introduced to me at a very young age because of what I was going through. And this career really spoke to me because I understood what an impact they made on me, and I really wanted to be able to make that impact or be able to help people and meet them where they're at in different life situations. To be able to, you know, not just to give back, but be able to, it kind of feels like a vocation. It feels like what I'm supposed to do. So yes and no.
Yeah. A question I have is on the recovery, on that, which is a lifetime thing. And I don't know if this is a proper comparison or not. I know we say alcoholism, gambling, they're diseases as well. And what is in through recovery so many years later, as you work through it, through your life, what is the area that you know is for you, the trigger, the things to be aware of? How do you feel you navigate that?
So that's a very interesting question, actually, because I don't think I've been asked that in quite some time. I think my life has changed so drastically over the short period of time. And I think for me, one of the biggest things is when I feel out of control. So like I was speaking about before, I was, you know, really talking about my own life experience when it comes to control and the ability to, like, when things feel out of control in my life, the one thing I can control is what I put into my body. Right. And so that's where the comparison comes with, you know, drug dependency and alcoholism and things like that. Though I'm in a place now where my body is back to where it was essentially from when I was a child, in the sense that I have hunger cues now, in the sense that I, you know, my heart is back to where it should be, or like it's supposed to be health wise. And, you know, I'm able to do physical exercise. And so I don't really have as many triggers anymore, because I feel like I'm in a space where I can control my environment. Though if that does change, and if there are situations where I do feel out of control most of the time, I think the biggest thing to focus on is making sure that no matter what, even if I'm sick, even if I'm, you know, not doing so well that day, or if I'm having a bad mental health day, that I'm still eating what they call mechanically. So still making sure I'm eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner, even though I don't want it, even though I'm not hungry, still making sure I'm doing that. That way the next day it doesn't lead to, well, okay, I didn't eat yesterday, maybe I'll eat a little bit less today, you know, and it can kind of spiral. So that's something I'm very conscious of. Yeah.
Paul, thank you so much for sharing with us, being so open and honest, talking about your experience with an eating disorder. And I'm sure many people listening in got a lot from it and appreciate it.
Yeah, thank well, you thank so you much. So much for having me on. I appreciate it, talking to you both.
We appreciate you. And again, the openness and the honesty. Folks, we'll take a break here on Kelly and Company. We were joined by Tal McLaughlin Rock, Danielle's granddaughter, on the Weekly Roundtable. We'll be right back to look ahead on our show and Now with Dave Brown right after this.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.